Hello, everyone, and we're back. The New Hollywood Podcast is back after a brief hiatus, and yeah. First off, my name is Dina Ray Ramos.
And I'm Amanda Nduka, and this episode, honestly, guys, I think you're going to love it. One of the stars of ABC's hit series, Black-ish, Tracee Ellis Ross.
She's also icon.
She's also, she's done shows like Girlfriends, like one of my all-time favorite shows.
High Note.
And then she's also doing the Daria spinoff, the Jodi, which is exciting.
Oh my God.
Which is really exciting because I love I know a lot of us a lot of us sort of grew up.
Well, me and you, at least.
So, and I'm sure a lot of people are familiar. It's definitely like a pop culture icon show.
It kind of has a cult following. And yeah. Could I be honest? I wanted to say this during our conversation, but I couldn't fit it in because it was such a great conversation. Yeah. There was so much I wanted to do. But I think Jodi on Daria is the only one with any sense. Like, she's the only level-headed one, right?
And she barely got any, like, shine on the show, so.
But Daria and Jane are in their own worlds, and they kind of were, like, you know, emo and whatever, but Jodi was just, like, even-headed, you know, even-handed and, like, fair. What's that?
Quinn, the sister.
Quinn was such trash.
She was so trash. She was, like, the epitome of white girl, like, privilege.
So Tracee recently nominated for an Emmy, and you know, it was such a great conversation, y'all. Yeah, like, this is a great way to come back from our hiatus, get y'all, all the girls, all hyped up for what we have to come. But Tracee is, I don't know, she's just a gem, and we had so much fun.
Like I said, we talk about a lot of stuff. So without further ado, here's Tracee.
Well, Tracee.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. You and your fabulous artwork in the background.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Got an artwork crystal, like on my bookshelf. Let me tell you something. It's too layered now.
So there's like books behind books.
Books on books on books. Can you see?
Oh, I have that book. I see that book that you have, the anti-racist book.
Yeah, we've got lots of important books here. The Dutch House, Ta-Nehisi Coates. We've got How to Be an Anti-Racist, Less Unchained, Black is the Body, The New Jim Crow. These are all the things that have been pulled out over the hiatus pandemic.
Well, Tracee,
trying to be rude. I want to make sure my phone is turned off.
Oh, yeah. I need to make sure mine is. See, mine wasn't. Mine wasn't so good. Good call. You reminded us. Tracee, thank you so much for joining us. You know, you're a busy gal. DNC hosting? Doing fresh that DNC hosting?
How you doing? Just moving into politics. You know, you go from the AMAs to the DNC.
That's the natural progression, right?
Yeah. Isn't it AMA, DNC?
It should be. It should be. How was that, though? How was sort of being the captain of that of day two?
It was really exciting. This is a very urgent moment, and I felt as scary as it is to sort of step into a different arena, because politics is not my world. I'm very socially active and civically engaged, but politics is not, that I frequent necessarily, and I'd never participated in the DNC. I'm like honored to be of service at that moment, be a facilitator of conversation and engagement, and as a face that people know, not in the capacity of politics, but as a natural progression in terms of the way that I voice, it felt like a really important opportunity to reach through the television into people's homes and to open up a conversation about engagement and participation in this moment and why there's such magnitude to it.
Yeah. I thought it was.
I don't think that's the right use of magnitude, by the way.
No, it is. It is now.
I did it with such conviction that I even believed it. And then I was like, nope.
No, you sold it. You sold it to me. Yeah. Magnitude.
I was going to say, I mean, I obviously, like, I I found this. The
did you guys want me to put these on? I'm so sorry. Should I?
No, no, you're. I think you're. I think you we're hear me fine. Okay? Yeah, we. I hear you fine. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But I was gonna say that, like, I just liked how encouraging and inspiring everybody's words were during the convention, and I was thinking this is like a this is just a nice sort of break from all the animosity that we've been seeing in politics so far. So yeah, it was a good watch. But Tracy, we at here at the New Hollywood Podcast.
Yeah. And by the way, you're our first episode after hiatus. We've been on hiatus for a while.
Yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, we took a little break. But yeah, we're back. And we're so happy to have you as
first one out of gate.
And ask for another person better. But for obviously we all know that you've come from a family that has been in showbiz. But for you, was that something that you always wanted to do as a young person? Is that something that you felt like you were going to fall into? And what were was there ever a moment where you were like, because you have really great comedic timing, and it's something that I've always wished that I also have. Is there a moment that you sort of were like, hey, I'm actually a really funny person?
I still don't know that I'm that funny. I think I'm really silly. But, you know, I sort of my silliness and comedic ability was part of the way I defended my shyness growing up. Mm. I was like, I had this like big kind of personality, and I loved to make people feel good. Like, I'm just one of those people. Like, I thought it was my job for a long time. Now I've made it my money paying job and my career, but I actually thought, like, from an emotional like space, like, I thought it was my job to like walk into a room and make everybody feel better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So maybe role in my family or whatever those dynamics are. But so I was always that person, and I'm very joyful at heart. Like, it's my natural temperament. And it just kind of evolved from there. The part that was fascinating, I didn't even realize I did this, but I always take on different voices and accents and characters and all that. And when I'm telling stories, because I think at the core, I'm a storyteller. When I'm telling stories, I'm constantly doing all the different voices and sort of creating the feeling by making a different sound and whatever. And that's when it started to dawn on me that perhaps it was something I would want to do. But it didn't happen until college. In high school, like, I thought it was wrong for them to make me do a play. I was like, I'm too shy and it's not fair and I shouldn't have to be forced to be on a stage if I don't want to be on a stage. And now, get me on a stage! Get me a stage! You know?
And then just throughout your career, I've Girlfriends is one of my all-time favorite shows.
Iconic.
And it's coming back!
Yeah, I was so happy. You don't understand, like, that show... me and what I wanted to be with my girlfriends. Part of the reason why I wanted to come to LA too. It was so iconic.
Wait, but I have to ask you though, Joan, Tony, Meyer, Lynn.
Honestly, that's hard. That's really, really hard.
You could be a little Tony, a little Joan.
That's what I was saying. I feel like I could see myself in each one. I can see myself in each one of them, which was part of the reason why I love the show so much, you know? But obviously you've had a really long career. Has there ever been a time where you felt that you needed to hide sort of your otherness or like extreme code switching to kind of conform and make people, I guess, comfortable? Because I feel like as Black women, we do that a lot.
Well, I think as women, that's also part of what society says our role is. And then particularly as a Black woman, sort of softening your edges or making sure that you are, I think anyone who isn't the very limited, teeny little space that is, given, if you are not a white man, all of us are trying to figure out how we're, you know, emotional lifting of how we can be received the way we want to be received and effective in our communication and all of that. So yes, of course, I have done lots of pretzeling. I still have to remind myself that's not my job. Sort of making other people comfortable. But at the same time, I do always take into account, how can I be most effective? You know, and sometimes there are certain, you know, there's certain spaces and environments where the bigness of my personality. It's not that I become somebody else, but I want to sort of make sure that I'm using the right version of it, you know? And I do think about those things. I think appropriateness is important, not at the expense of your own self and not at the expense of your identity, but in terms of navigating worlds and finding your way. So I have many versions of code switching in all different kinds of environments, particularly around my hair. There's a lot more freedom in that area now, but we're still fighting those battles. I'll tell you a fun one. This is kind of funny. All through growing up, we'll see how it goes. Yeah, we'll see how it goes with my lips on. But for years in my early teen years, I tried to teach myself to smile so my top lip would go away because I thought my lips were too big. So I'm going to try it because I could do it pretty seamlessly when I was younger. But
oh, what? Wow. That's a hidden talent.
That is a talent.
It's ridiculous.
But it is ridiculous, though.
It is ridiculous. But yeah, so there are many of those versions. Those are some of the physical things, you know, in terms of my hair or thinking my lips were too big. But I've done so many versions of them in terms of how I communicate. You know, it was always, for me, the biggest thing was putting forth that I was smart.
Yeah.
Like there was a way that I taught myself to communicate, to be clear in my language, to know what I was saying before I was saying it, so that I was never misunderstood and thought of as a dumb girl or any of those things. I also was an athlete growing up and I was really athletic and I'm very competitive. So it was always really important, that whole thing of, you know, you throw like a girl, you run like a girl, any of those things I always pushed up against. Those are such dumb things. They're so ridiculous and so limiting in terms of our identities and discovering who we are as people. So yes, I have experienced all of those things and still continue to push up against the status quo in all areas of my life. I mean, you know, I did the Glamour Women of the Year speech about my life is mine and being, now I'm 47, I don't know how old I was then, but a woman who's single and doesn't have children, and that version of having to sort of pretzel yourself as if something's wrong with me, that I have not found that version of what people imagine I should have found by now, blah, blah, blah. So all of those kinds of things absolutely come up, and I love addressing them either in my work as a character. I do some of that in how I inhabit Joan. I'm sorry, I just said Joan.
Well, we were just talking about.
Okay, because that was crazy.
About girlfriend.
It's how I inhabit Bo Johnson.
Yeah.
But also in the way I speak in the world, what I said, you know, those were my words that I said at the DNC. And the words that I found for my 275 words that I had, was really important to me that I showed up in a particular way and named a particular thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, we had, I keep on remembering our conversation with Dawn Porter, Amanda. I remember with like Dawn Porter and Natasha and Amber, and how Dawn Porter says a lot of people of color and queer people and women wake up every morning picking which battles we're gonna fight that day. Mm-hmm. And I keep on remembering that. Has that, like, Tracy, you said that, you know, you've been, you know, kind of still pushing up against, you know, this, the dominant culture. Have you found it easier? Have you found it harder? Like, especially with the changing landscape?
Yeah.
I think the reason I find it easier is because the older that I get, the more I become myself and the more I have a confidence in who that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I will say that I don't know what it's like when you're in a long-term, good, comfortable relationship that really does support you, where you come home to someone or you have a particular, there's a given in terms of your support system, right? Mm. As a single person, I feel like I have to be very active about cultivating that and staying connected in those spaces. It's not a given, right? So, I do still experience those things, and then I have to make an effort to reach out for the support to be reminded of my confidence in who I am and my comfortability in who I am, and that I get to choose which places and when I'm going to fight those battles. You know, one of the things a lot of times young girls ask, whether it's through Twitter or, you know, when there's calling in for questions from people, like, what should a young girl do who's being bullied in whatever capacity around her hair? You know, should she fight to wear her hair that way? And one of the things, her natural way, and one of the things I always say is, if it isn't going to create another wound. So I think we get to each move at our own pace around those things. Everything doesn't have, you don't have to fight every battle every day. You get to decide when you feel ready, you feel strong enough to withstand what might come back at you so that it's not going to make that wound bigger, you know? So I always say, start in the small spaces, start in the places where you are going towards the love, where you know you're going to be celebrated for who you are authentically. Get your courage, wear your floaties until you can take them off and withstand what this crazy world out here might throw in your direction, you know?
I think that's really important that you said that, because I feel like especially now with social media, people are expected, or put expectations on you, like, because you're a certain person or you fit in this category, you should be doing this or you should be standing up for that. And some people are more, I guess, more vocal than others. And like you said, it's okay. It's all in your time. Like, if you don't want to address this now because you don't feel comfortable, and like you said, you don't, maybe I still have wounds from it.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any, like.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I feel like the other piece is that people, our culture also pushes people to say something before they've had time to process it.
Yeah.
You know? Yes.
And I think
that's a word.
Yeah, like, process. There's no progress without process. And each of us has a different process. Mm-hmm. And I like to say, go as slow as the slowest parts of you, so that when you make a move, you're bringing your whole self.
Yeah.
Not just the bits that are ready, you know? Yeah. And it's like if you think of a tennis game, or whatever. Yeah, tennis game. Let's think of a tennis game.
Something with a net.
Yeah, something with a net, two people and a ball. You know what I mean? So you're going back and forth. You're going to be at the level of the person that's lower.
Yeah.
Mm.
Otherwise, that ball's not going to keep going, you know? So sometimes we just got to slow down. And I think it's okay, you know? And I feel like particularly right now, we are in a very, very unprecedented time. It is complex in so many ways.
Yeah.
It just feels like, and all the people that we love and don't know and do know, and everybody's having their different version of how to make sense of what's happening. It is a vulnerable time. It is a time to be really delicate and compassionate with each other, with ourselves. And so I don't think, you know, it's the cancel culture is really interesting to me. It does not leave a lot of room for growth.
No.
Yeah. 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 Cancel culture is weird to me, to be honest with you.
I will say some people do deserve it. And like a Harvey Weinstein, like.
Yeah. There are some people who immediately fall into the category.
But is that cancel culture, or is that just like.
Humanity, like, yeah.
Yeah, or is that just humanity? Because I feel like the cancel culture part of it that gets really complicated, I don't know, you're totally right. There's people to be canceled. I was gonna try and make sense of that, but you know what, no, there are people that should be canceled.
Yeah, there are people who just should be canceled and that's it, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe don't use the word cancel, but like, oh, we don't have time to fuck with you anymore, that kind of thing.
Like, that's not, or you know what I mean? Like, that's
your thing.
Like, we can't, This is on no one but you, sir.
Yeah,
it should be. Yes, there you go.
Choice. Like, it shouldn't be a thing where you're forcing people to do something.
Yeah, but I hear you.
Yeah.
I think what I love, I heard somebody say this, instead of calling people out, call them in.
Okay.
Right? So you call them in, you give them an invitation to say, like, you say, hey, that thing, not great. Not great. And that perhaps opens the window for someone to say, wait, what wasn't great about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and then there can actually be a dialogue.
Yeah.
Instead of people just yelling at each other.
Yeah, because and that's the thing that's really hard. Like, I think there's so, this is some hefty stuff for everybody because everybody has a personal relationship to this stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we all have our own personal stories about and experiences about these things that we're charged up about.
Right.
So you gotta, not you gotta, but it would be nice if we could have a little more space in there.
Yeah.
For some people.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Black-ish.
Shall
you know, the show, this show you're on.
Oh, this little show I'm on. I love it. Let's talk about it.
First off, congratulations on the
Yes, congratulations on the Emmy nom.
Thank you.
It's so exciting. You know, Black-ish, you know, when you first signed on to Black-ish, how, I mean, I read an LA Times article with you, but you know, and how you approach Rainbow and Bo. But what were the conversations you had when you first started, and how did you want her to kind of subvert the typical TV mom, especially a Black TV mom? You know,
yeah,
there's a distinction.
It's interesting. I think when I first started, most of the conversations were about what was so intriguing to me about this show and this character, which still remain true, which I think is really exciting 7 years later. You know what I mean? Mm. I loved that at the core of this show, that the heart of this show was a relationship between a husband and wife that loved each other and liked each other. That to me felt revolutionary, particularly through the face and beingness of a Black couple. I love that this was an American family who didn't happen to be Black. We were Black. Yeah. We are Black. So that it wasn't that we were, that was sort of the background of who we were. It was at the forefront of who we were and our experiences and how we were navigating the world. I love that this was a woman who was more than one thing. And that's part of, I keep itching, you guys, I'm covered in mosquitoes.
Like, wait, were you somewhere?
Are you not experiencing what me and all my friends are experiencing? I'm not joking you, like between 5 and 7 p.m. It's like crazy.
Yeah, I get random mosquito bites too. And I'm like, where are these mosquitoes even coming from?
Oh, I killed one the other day and I was very upset about it.
No, I'm not getting them. I feel left out.
No, don't feel left out. I have a couple of my windows that give the best cross ventilation don't have fans. They don't have
screens. Yeah.
Screens in them. And so if I leave them open between 5 and 7, it's so disturbing. And I'm not joking you. I'm covered in mosquito bites. My ankles.
Oh my God.
And mosquitoes love me and my family members. We are like, we got some sweet blood.
I do too.
So the other thing that started to become conversations and dialogues, not necessarily within the show, but for me, was this story is told through Dre's eyes. That's what Black-ish is. It's Dre's exploration of life in this family. And I think Bo kind of acts like a guide for the audience to a certain extent. I'm a little bit the conscience of the audience a little bit. And so the stories are not always told through Bo's point of view. So what was really important to me is that my character remained her own person, that my entire identity or Bo's entire identity was not in context to Dre or in context of her children, but was in context of herself. So she had a point of view that was based on her lived experience and her life, and that whenever I made my way onto the screen, that you would be able to feel my full life and not just how I'm reacting to my husband. Mm. And so that has been a constant process for me, which is just the part of, that's what I do, that's what you do as a character, you know, the acting process is that sort of, how do you keeping her true, keeping her honest? And then, as you know, because some of the fun things that people pick up on because I say, and we made a joke about it at work, is that these things that are traditionally lady chores in the history of television, God bless you.
Bless you.
They are not lady chores. They're just chores. They're house chores.
Yeah.
Somehow in the history, in the context of television and in, you know, societal norms, those things were considered women's chores. And so I constantly am kind of pushing up against that to say, is that really necessary? Because I like to take the bird's eye view and look at Bo, not just on our show, but in the context of television.
Yeah.
As a Black woman, I like to look at it from that standpoint. What are we actually, what's the representation that we are adding into the picture of who we can be?
Yeah.
I also love that Bo and Dre are these flawed, ridiculous parents who are like trying to do their best, but not always doing, like, even though they know better, sometimes they don't do better. And like, that's what's happening. And we are sort of pulling apart the cleavers, you know, as if a mother needs to do it all, look great, have dinner on the table, and satisfy her husband with a smile all the time, you know, like that's not the reality of a reflection of who we are in our world, that every relationship is a negotiation, who each of us wants to be with each other, how we want to be parents. That's something that you do in a relationship, you discover that. And Bo and Dre, over the 6 years, have discovered that. And I feel like they are a couple, like, it's so funny because it's not even, they're just a thing now. That's not me, it's not Anthony, but it's a thing. They're people. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned, you know, the chore part, because binging, if you go back and watch old episodes of series, like if you go back and watch, say, Beverly Hills 90210, Cindy Walsh is always cooking. She's always cleaning, gardening. And then the episodes they give her are so boring. So I was like, really, and I'm re-
But you even look at like Girlfriends. There were some, I just randomly caught a scene on Instagram the other day, and it was Maya and Darnell, and she went and spent too much money on a dress. Mm-hmm. And it was this whole thing that was within the context of the old school version of man must bring money and woman must cook and clean, you know what I mean? And it was really interesting because even in these 20 years, there's been so much progression in that kind of assumption and thinking. It's fun to think about. And I love thinking about it as I create character. It's really fun.
Yeah, I'm currently rewatching Moesha and Dee.
Okay. Love you for that. Love you so much for that.
But I'm like really examining Dee, Charlie Rao. And I'm like, oh, she's a stepmom. But like, she's doing like typical, you know, cooking in the morning and everything, but she balances that so well. Like, she's this matriarch who you really can't fuck with in this interesting way. But yeah, that's like, I've been really, and I'm like, oh, I have problems with Moesha, the character. I'm like, oh, you know, are very really, disrespectful.
That's hilarious. It's so interesting when you look back at things that were so much a part of your life, and then you look back years later with the point of view that we're in now. Wow, I really didn't see that. That was one of the reasons. I don't know if you guys have watched Disclosure.
Yes.
I was so grateful for that documentary.
Me too.
There were a couple of things that were so, I mean, there were so many things that were important. But the fact that it was trans people communicating through their own mouths. There wasn't a narrator telling us what was happening. We were hearing it through their own mouths. I found so enlightening, and I could not believe how often I had missed so much of what they pointed out in movies and television shows that I had watched and that I had laughed at. It was a real important wake-up call. And I hope to be and consider myself open-hearted and very liberated in how I look at things. Mm-hmm. And that I miss those. I was so grateful to be tapped on the shoulder and woken up in those ways. And that's one of the, that's actually the greatest example of what we were just talking about.
Yeah, we had Disclosure on our podcast, like the filmmaking team. And I think I love, love going to other, sources of TV, film that aren't of me and learning something. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't like that. And I think shows like Black-ish or Disclosure, the movie Disclosure, or even like something like Fresh Off the Boat or anything like that addresses blind spots. And I still have lots of them. And I continue.
It's built into humanity. Yeah. That's why we want inclusive tables.
Yes, we do.
People. That's why tokenism doesn't work. That's why we need tables that are filled with all different kinds of people. That's why our world needs to reflect that, because we all have blind spots. But what I would love, and everybody's different version of privilege gives you a blind spot, whatever those things are. But I would love somebody to tap me on the shoulder and say, "Hey, Tracy, did you realize that thing you said? Like, oh my God, no, I didn't. Thank you for telling me."
Yeah.
Thank you. And
exactly.
Can you explain that a little more so I know and don't do it again? And so I can catch somebody else when they do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wish someone would go, you know, someone on the other day on Instagram, I wrote "ladies and gents" or something like that. And someone said, "That's not, don't do that." And I was like, my God, thank you.
Yeah.
It just, some of the things we're so used to doing from my generation or whatever that is, that I don't realize. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. And I changed it right away. I was like, thank you for pointing that out.
People get offended by like somebody correcting you. Like, I feel like it's people think that there's something negative or combative to being corrected.
Well, sometimes people correct you in really negative, combative.
Yeah.
That's true.
But it's like, if they like pull you aside and be all, "Hey, this is not cool," I respond better to that rather than they're like, "Oh, you should," like kind of finger wagging. I don't like the finger wagging.
Well, yeah. I think that's part of that's where cancel culture gets complicated.
Yeah. So and it all comes back.
Yes, it does. So like if someone had taken my caption and then screenshotted that and turned it into a thing before giving me an opportunity to learn something, and then all of a sudden I'm canceled. I mean, that's like a weird example because I think
it's true. Like,
but it's like you want to give people the opportunity to see their blind spot. Now, if someone responds like, "That's not what I meant," But I personally, and I say this like I would like to know if I am hurting someone inadvertently.
Yeah.
I want to know that if anything I am doing is inadvertently perpetuating oppression or a stereotype or whatever, like I would love to know and then be able to make an educated choice about how I want to respond.
Recently, yes.
Conversation, by the way.
That's what we do. That's what we do here. We make dreams come true and we have great conversations. it's so interesting you said ladies and gents, that thing. Like when I introduce this podcast sometimes, I say, "Hello, ladies and gentlemen," and then I listen back at it and I'm all, "I shouldn't have said that," you know? But it's also, it's all programmed into us to say that, yeah.
It is, and we've learned things a certain way, and it does take time to unlearn them. And by the way, "hello, ladies and gentlemen," from when I learned it, was actually the courteous a correct thing to say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's fine. I'm like, look, I would like to remain teachable.
Yeah.
I truly would.
Being open, yeah. Well, like speaking of that, you know, Hulu recently added that episode. All the girls are talking about it. Please, Baby, Please, which is relevant now, if not more so, you know, than then. It just feels like it could have been shot yesterday, to be honest with you.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, 3 years ago. When you first read that episode, what was your reaction? And are you, like, this is kind of like a multi-tiered question that you could just answer in one clump, but what was your reaction when reading it, and at the same time when they decided to shelve it, and when they decided to bring it back, you know, because that show went on a journey.
Yeah.
And, you know,
First of all, you know, we do 24 episodes a season, so we're moving at a pace that it doesn't always dawn on me the magnitude.
There you go.
There we go.
Come on, magnitude.
That's the correct usage. It doesn't always dawn on me the magnitude of what we're doing or the the gravitas that we are sort of leaning into, do you know what I mean, when we're shooting an episode, because we're kind of doing what we're doing. And the truth is, the episode itself didn't feel so far from the DNA of our show. In hindsight, as in today, not when it got shelved, I heard Kenya say, and he spoke so articulately about it, that it was one of the most partisan episodes we had done on Black-ish, that usually our, you know, when we're dealing with these heavier topics, we don't necessarily pick a side.
Yeah.
And this one was particularly on a side. And I think that played into the larger context of both what was happening in our world and what was happening with our network. Mm-hmm. There was a merger going on.
Yeah.
From what I understand. So I personally, at the time, because we were in the process of shooting, we had shot it and moved on to whatever we were shooting and there was more to do, I didn't invest myself in what had happened. It wasn't my battle to fight. It wasn't my episode to fight about. And it was, it's very rare in my life that I go, that's none of my business.
Mm. Mm.
But I do think it was one of those times where I was like, you know what? This part is none of my business on this one. It wasn't an episode. It wasn't my story. It was, you know, all those kinds of things. It wasn't something in terms of that. And I didn't really know the machinations of what was going on. Now watching, and by the way, I had never seen it until it just came out.
Oh, really?
Wow. I had never seen it. They shelved it.
And they took it away from everyone.
They took it away. Like, I had not seen it. It never ended up. We have an app that, you know, in advance of the episode airing, it finally pops up. So we do usually get to see things like a week or two in advance. But I never had seen it. I had never seen it. And the truth is, I couldn't remember what was, I mean, like, I remembered it, but I couldn't remember, like, what it, I was like, what was it? Was it a line? Was it a thing? Like, I couldn't remember what it was. I was like, what could have triggered this so deeply? Watching it back, it is eerie.
Mm.
3 years ago, that's where we were. And also, truly shows you the magnitude. Can't help it.
That's going into the headline of this podcast episode.
Just call the podcast The Magnitude. It really shows you the urgency of this moment, because it shows you within 3 years how much worse it's gotten, how much more has been untangled, like tangled up or whatever. It's that much worse, you know? And so to a certain extent, I don't know, maybe it's better it waited to come out. I have no idea. You know, sometimes you trust the process, even though it feels in the moment so not great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But interesting. And what a strong and powerful episode.
I
directed it, by the way. Kenya directed that.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
I have to wonder, though, like, if it weren't for what's going on in our current, you know, climate with what happened after George Floyd's killing and Black Lives Matter and the protest, I have to wonder, would they have ever showed that episode? Or
I don't know.
Yeah. It's just so interesting that show, like you said, it was watching it. I was just like, it was chilling. And I was all, and at the end of it, I was all, they should have just titled that episode, I Told You So.
You should have done an AKA, I Told You So.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Those are really good questions that I think are part of why it's interesting that it's back out. You know, those are that when you get, have a conversation with Kenya, those are really good ones to ask him. Okay. He has not only his own personal insight, because he was the one walking through that experience, but he also has a very astute point of view about the larger picture of it and now the meaning that it holds. And I think it's part of what Kenya does in all of his work. You know, he is interested in pushing those envelopes for conversation, not necessarily for answers, but for conversation, because I think so much of what we need to be doing is having, again, we're back to the same thing, but where cancel culture gets complicated is we need to be leaning in and calling each other in on these conversations. in order for us to make progress. I think it's important.
So obviously season 7 is a coming. And then
is a coming.
And I also season 2 of Mixed-ish is coming. We had
Tika was on.
Tika was on. I love me some Tika.
But what can you tell us about these upcoming seasons? And if you, I don't know if you guys are filming or you're still on hiatus because of the pandemic, but if there is a topic that you haven't covered yet, that you really, really want to cover for either one of the shows or even both.
Well, I can't disclose anything from Black-ish. Mm-hmm. We are about to go into, we're in production.
Okay.
So we've already had our table reads. I think we have another table read next week, and we're about to start shooting, and we've already been doing lots. But what I can say is our show is going to keep being our show.
That's some broad strokes right there.
Yeah, but not really, because we know the stuff that's going on in our world. And yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of really big things happening, and so we will... in Black-ish form, in the DNA that, you know, is what we've established that we are, we will walk in that direction. Mixed-ish, we will continue deepening and exploring these characters in the 80s in a way that wonderfully and creepily mirrors what we're in now. Mm. You know, there's something really the same way you say, you know, you go back and watch Moesha and you're like, what? Whoa, you know what I mean? Like, what? I just took all this for, it was what it was, and now you're like, what? It's interesting to do a show where you're actually going back.
Oh my God, that's so true.
And to have Bo, my version of Bo, the grown-up Bo, be from the current vantage point so that my voiceover is sort of, you know, telling the story today. It's really interesting to do that, but I know the first couple of episodes are about sort of deepening their world, who they are, and us deepening our understanding and relationship to who these people are that we have only had one season of. You know, I think of second season of Black-ish and how long it takes to really fall into that group where everybody, you know, I remember on Girlfriends, Mara Brock-Akil saying the first season of a show is all about retelling the same story over and over again from different points of view so that by the end of the season, the audience knows exactly who everybody is. Mm. They almost know what their point of view is going to be before they say it.
Yeah.
And so that's what Mixed-ish was in the first season. We were really like, who are they? Who are they? Let's tell it over and over again. And then we can start to deepen that as we move into season 2.
Yeah, I love how, like you said, the show is set in the 80s and there are things that were done in the 80s that we wouldn't do now, but you explain it. Like your character, like you said, the bow, you explain it. So I love how we sort of get this education about why, you know, but both shows, why black hair is the way it is and our relationship with black hair and just different.
Isn't that interesting? I thought that hair episode was incredible. I was going to say that there was a line, I was just looking back at some of the Mixed-ish episodes as we're working on scripts now, and sometimes I revisit some of the old episodes to kind of remember exactly where we were and remember character traits and stuff. And I wrote down this line that, whoa, why can't I think of his name? The granddad.
Gary.
That's the actor's name. Gary.
Yeah, that's his real name.
I'm lost for a second, but that's okay.
Granddad, we'll just say granddad.
Yeah, the granddad. It's the environmental episode where she goes through and starts Earth Day. Mm-hmm. And it was so crazy. He like opens up his styrofoam. Like styrofoam was like the big thing that year. You know, he has his sandwich and Alicia comes into the office and she's like, dude, you got to get rid of, I mean, she didn't say it like this, but like, dude, you got to get rid of the styrofoam. And he says this line, he says, are you seriously considering that we take this environmental stuff seriously?
Oh my God.
But, right? But like you think of the 80s and where we are now, are you seriously thinking that we take, like, are you seriously suggesting that we seriously take this shit seriously? And it's so there's something really interesting that happens in that because you realize where it led us and what happened, you know? So fun exploring that stuff on Mixed-ish.
Yeah, I think Mixed-ish is like, I have a lot of mixed friends, especially a lot of half Filipino, half white friends. And one of my good friends struggles so much because she looks white. you know, and you know, people are like, even our own community isn't accepting of her. It's really damaging and it's really offensive because, like, one day, I think it was the whole story about Shannon Sossaman being getting to play this Filipina, it was like some pilot or something like that. And immediately the Filipino community went after her saying, oh, she does not look Filipino, blah, 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 blah. And my friend got like so upset about that, that she started crying and like she just shut down. And so like, I'm really just appreciative of like, I'm like, oh, if you have even a quarter Filipino in you, you're in the club. But there are some, even in the Black community or the Latinx community.
There's a lot of that. And I think it comes from the systems of oppression that have been put in place that tell us we have to decide who we are. And there's so much to it. One of my best friends is, say again?
I said, or if you look a certain way, we have a system that tells us if you look a certain way, then you can't be this, you know?
There's a lot of limitation and oppression in those areas. Mm-hmm. One of my closest friends is half Filipino, and people always say that they think she's Latina. They think she's a light-skinned Black girl. There's like, so she's just like,
I mean, this is the result of colonization, like colonialism.
She's like, I don't even answer the question anymore because it's just like too hard to like for people to understand and make sense of. But it's really interesting. I mean, almost all of my friends are mixed. My best friend is Lebanese and Trinidadian. And it's so crazy because she looks like me and her brother looks Lebanese. I have Chinese and Italian, my best friend from college, that's still my best friend. And one of the things for me, like with us in our friendship group that's been so wonderful, is we connect on the human level, but for me, the traditions, cultures that all of us come from has so deepened and created such a robust, beautiful friendship of how we learn about each other. It's like my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of my favorite examples is both my best friend Monica, who's Chinese and Italian, and Samira, Trinidadian Lebanese, they both take their shoes off at the door. And I didn't grow up right. So I didn't grow up taking my shoes off at the door. But they both come at it from very different cultural spaces. Yeah. Yeah. And it was really exciting to me when I first became friends with them like 20 years ago, I don't even know how long now, understanding where it came from and why and what the meaning was there. So interesting to me. And I'm always inquiring those areas. Amanda, you're trying to say something, sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and what you find, especially when you have friends that have such different backgrounds, is that there's always some commonality. Like you and I always go back and forth because we're both first generation American.
From immigrant families, yeah. From
immigrant families, and we talk about some of our experiences, like, oh my gosh, my parents do that too. Like, it's like, even though we grew up in different places, it's still like, our parents are still, you know, they come here, they're still kind of strict.
WS.
A lot of things.
Amanda, so, where's your family from?
Nigeria.
Both your parents Nigerian?
Both my parents, yeah.
They meet here or did they meet there?
No, they met in Nigeria and then they moved here together. Yeah.
It's like, and then like the one thing I think there's a common bond with immigrant families or people of color or whatever is that they will use a tub, an empty tub of country crock to put in food. Every single immigrant family, Black, Latinx, they will use the fuck out of any vessel that they find.
That is so funny. And then I don't know if this moves across too, but that cooking grease is in a coffee can.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes!
Yeah.
I do that like when I deep fry anything, I'm like, I need to put this something.
I won't deep fry in my house for that exact reason.
Unless I know.
I'm traumatized by that coffee can.
Yeah, and it actually really grows.
Really freaked me out growing up.
Because it's like super dirty oil that has all this, but you still have to reuse it.
My mom used to strain it. She'll be all, gotta strain it, make it sure.
And that's how I learned that you can't put hot oil down the sink.
Yes, that's how I learned. Oh my God, see? That goes, now we have air fryers.
Right? Because I literally, I was like, I remember the day. Like, I remember the day that I was like pouring the fried chicken grease down the thing. And my mom was like, no. That's with the coffee can. I was like, what?
coffee can grease.
I remember that.
Guys, I'm having so much fun.
I'm having so much fun. This conversation, I don't even know what we were supposed to be talking about.
We're talking about your Emmy nomination.
But Tracy, obviously, I guess we need to wrap it up soon. Can you?
Yeah, sure. I feel like is someone texting me telling me I have to get off here?
We can do this all day, but you know.
We'll do a part two later.
Okay, great.
What's next for you? I know you're doing the Daria spinoff, which is,
oh my god, and I recently started re-binging that too.
I did when I first took on that project. I did some binging, but I think I need to binge again before I move into actually recording my voice stuff. But you know, I'm very excited about Daria. And there's Mixed Dish Daria, and then there's three other projects that I'm executive producing that you guys don't know about yet.
Just tell us now.
No. You will hear about those when they're at a space in a place that feels good. Pattern is still rocking, and really it's been exciting running that company and having it evolve and all of that. And our styling products are out now, and Ulta's stores are back open. So we're actually back in brick and mortar stores, but we're still obviously always available on patternbeauty.com. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the last year, 2 years has been about deepening my roots in creating content. That was so important to me for so long. And now I'm at a place in my career where I actually have the opportunity to do that, to be a part of creating narratives and pulling in all different kinds of talent and creating expansive stories that reflect our lives and reflect the wholeness of our lives, like the lived experience of our lives. And I'm really interested in that. And so there's three other projects that are brewing, and I'm sure there'll be more from there. And I really, most importantly, I think over the next 3 months, or it's way less than that, but encouraging and supporting the engagement and participation in this election.
Yes.
People getting educated and really having those difficult conversations with people to understand where their apathy might be coming from, where their fear might be coming from, and really engaging people in constructive and effective ways so that we all can get moving out of this space that we're in.
Yeah, amen. Everybody vote, please.
Yeah.
Yes.
And by the way, voting is part of it. Voting is a very important part of it, but there's so much more.
Yeah. You know, engagement.
Engagement, civic engagement, social engagement, getting informed, all of those kinds of things. So really important.
You never get tired, because even if the desired outcome happens, it's like, but we still need to continue on.
Yeah, because if we rest, then nothing, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. AOC actually did an Instagram live the other, I think after she spoke. And at the whole beginning of it, she does a Q&A, but the whole beginning of it, she really talks about that. And she talks about it so beautifully and eloquently, that as progressives and, you know, in this process, that voting is a part of it.
Yeah.
It is absolutely a part of it. And I believe that all elections are urgent, particularly for those that are marginalized and those that are the most vulnerable in our culture. Every election is urgent as we continue to walk towards a more perfect union and safety and justice for all of us. But this election, it is not a joke. It is not a joke what we are on the precipice of if we don't get involved. And as we know, like, this last election was won by such small margins. So we need those margins to not be small, so there is no discrepancy.
Right.
And
yes,
the vote is being messed with, tinkered with, and suppressed. So we must vote early. We must assist each of our fellows and friends in sorting out and understanding how to do that because of everything that's going on. Sorry, I get real sidetracked on that.
Okay.
Okay, so we'd like to end off these interviews with this little segment we call the FAQs, the facts. random fun questions.
Okay.
Whoa! That scared me.
Okay, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Trust your gut, follow your heart, and what other people think of you is none of your business.
Okay, that's a t-shirt. okay, so would you
I said that to you the other day, Amanda.
Yeah, you did. I freaking love it.
So this is coming off of an Instagram video you posted about bugs.
Because,
okay, so here you go. Here's the question. Would you rather be submerged neck down in a tank full of assorted bugs that don't bite or non-venomous snakes?
I hate this question so much. I think I'm going to throw up.
Okay, that we will accept that answer as an answer.
No, which one? I want to know which one.
Yeah.
snakes.
Oh, I think I'd choose snakes too.
I don't even know what I would do. Honestly.
I can't. Yeah. Let's change the subject. That's a horrible question.
Okay. Okay. Go, Amanda.
Who's your first celebrity crush?
Justin Bateman.
From
Silver Spoons.
Wait, is it
Jason Bateman?
Oh, Jesus Christ! His sister Justine.
Yeah, I was gonna say I know Justine Bateman. Yeah,
I get them confused too.
Now I don't get them confused. That's ridiculous. I just combined Jason Bateman, Silver Spoons, and I just thought, and I still think he's exceptional. I think my crushes have evolved in a very different direction.
Did you have a poster of him on your wall?
No, I wasn't a poster girl. I had like modeling photos of like women on my walls. Jason, when I started, and then it started to emerge into a very different area.
Okay. That's another conversation for later.
I love a black man.
So what was your favorite Halloween costume worn on Black-ish?
On Black-ish? That's so hard.
I know you those costumes.
I think I'll be honest, it was from Us.
Oh really?
I lost
my eyebrows and that short little wig.
Yes, I love that.
I loved that a lot.
You guys did the Beyonce and Jay-Z costume, right?
That was really good too.
That was a good one.
I really loved Cher.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good yeah, that's your
really and I love the Prince moments too.
Yeah. Oh God, the hair and makeup hair and makeup and costumes on Black-ish are
they're on point.
I just did an interview with Aroxy and Michelle, and you guys are always on point.
On point.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a food or snack that you absolutely love that the majority of people will find absolutely disgusting?
Example would be like black licorice.
That's my favorite thing in the world. Stand by.
Oh my God.
Actually.
Oh my God, really? Do you like black licorice?
What? Love black licorice!
Stop.
Can I tell you? This is my best treat in the world. This one, and there's one other brand that has been sold out since the pandemic. My favorite brand has been sold out since the pandemic, but I will also do Panda.
Wow.
Me and my dad love black licorice.
Really? Oh my God.
Yes.
And now she's eating.
He's like example, black licorice.
And I love olives.
Oh, I love olives.
Well, I'll eat a jar of olives.
Whole jar of olives.
I did last night before bed. My sister used to say, get off of me. You smell like olives. I love olives.
I think mine is like raw onions. I love eating raw. I don't know if majority of people find that.
Do you eat them with anything else?
No, sometimes I just eat them on.
Really? I did not know this about you. Look, it's all coming out. It's all coming out now.
Oh my God. Black-ish. Look at the Black-ish.
No, David wrote that.
Black licorice. I'm black liquor.
Mine is, I don't think this is disgusting, but I love me a frozen burrito. Like,
wait, but do you heat it up?
Yeah, I heat it up because, yeah. I started heating it up in my air fryer. That is a game changer. I'm having fun with my air fryer these days.
You just got an air fryer.
So I don't have an air fryer. I also don't have a rice cooker. I don't have a dishwasher. I'm ridiculous.
Okay, our final question is, we ask this to all our guests, is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, film and TV, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream that you mm-hmm. think people need to know about and deserves more recognition? Oh. Yes, you did!
I'm gonna start with MJ Rodriguez because yes. I feel that she deserved an Emmy nomination. Mm. And I wanna tell you why. Okay, why'd you make me get this?
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
I want to tell you why the character of Blanca is so important. First of all, her performance is exceptional. Mm. The work that she does is incredibly mm. moving. And there's one scene when she's explaining to her youngest new son about HIV and using a condom. That scene will reverberate through my life forever. The performance was pitch perfect and so moving. But she's redefining and changing our understanding of motherhood. And I'm grateful for it. As a single, no child person, I'm mother all the time. And I am very mothering. I'm a nurturer. And the way that Blanca is changing that understanding for people is an example of the impact that television can have.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it even has given me space, and I am not completely mirrored in her experience.
Yeah.
But the essence of what she is expressing has changed even how I give myself space to name the way I mother. So that is one. Yeah. Wanuri. I don't know why I can't think of her last name, but she's a director and a writer. I am working with her on something. She is exceptional. It's one of those days, like names are escaping me, obviously. Yeah. Gary Cole is the actor's name. I cannot think of it.
There you go.
ridiculous. So she did a TED talk called about bubblegum something that is worth seeing. She's a writer director. One should watch out for her. I think she's incredible. Obviously, Michaela Cole, but everybody
has
her on our minds. But what she is doing with I May Destroy You is truly changing the way, similar to the way Atlanta changed how we looked at what you could do in a half an hour. She's changing the way we look at storytelling.
Yeah.
Particularly around the subject matter that she's exploring, but also how you utilize a lead character and how you do that and bring in the reality of what we're in right now is really, it's a dial click. Like there's a real shift in what she's doing. Can't help it, gotta do it, because he's one of my favorite people in the world, but Kelvin Harrison Jr.
What? Yes, friend of the podcast.
Yeah, I love him.
I just think his work as an actor, what he's calling in, his ability to transform himself, his willingness to transform himself, his attention to the craft of acting, and the way it's coming through him, I just think is beautiful. I think he's physically beautiful, but he has a depth to him for, you know, he's like a 50-year-old, 26-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's a thing that he's bringing through him that I'm really moved by. So those are some of the top ones I thought of.
Nice.
All great names, yeah.
Yeah, great name. Like, Kelvin is like this perfect intersection of charm and talent.
Yes.
It's like, come on, that's unfair.
But also craft and skill.
Yeah. You
know, yes.
He really, like, I'm really good friends with him now. And so I know his process. Like I worked with it when we worked together, but now as his friend, like I know, I'm like, I know what's going on. I'll talk to you in a week. Like you're like, mm-hmm. he's like diving in, you know, but he transforms his body, his face. Like he just, there's a way that he loves what he does that. And I also find that, I don't know. I think there's a real, there's a courage that comes from this younger generation of actors that I am grateful for, where the lines of limitation around gender and all these different kinds of things just have a different meaning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Obama said something about that last night, but it's true.
It is.
Like there's a way that this younger generation, like it's them, you know, they don't see, it's no big deal. It's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, Tracy, this conversation, I want to just continue this but you know, we all have meetings and
we've all got Zooms to go to.
We got Zooms and news to break and food to eat and licorice to eat.
I've got to say, this is my last one and I don't want to eat it because I like it after dinner. I'm going to have to like hide it for myself. Yeah.
Licorice again, just because you
know, people hate it. It's yeah. there's not if you know you don't like it, you don't need to try it.
Yeah, yeah. Taste buds do change. Like my taste buds have, like I used to hate like broccoli, now I love it. Like I can't get enough of broccoli.
Well, and
that's true.
That's true. You listen to your body in that way.
Tracy, thank you so much. Like this was probably one of my favorite episodes.
It's the best.
Thank you guys. This was really a great conversation.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll all get to like Kiki and meet again soon in person.
Oh, one day.
All right. Have a great
Thank you
day.
So much, Tracy. You too. Thank you so much.
Bye.